everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the founder and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. Well, we're charging bravely onward into part two of the extended off-season interview series. Before we welcome our guest for this week, we do have a little bit of news and then a fair number of announcements related to the site. So we'll get into that in just a second. But before we do, please remember to subscribe to the podcast. You know, you can find us on wherever you get your podcast. We're on all the major platforms. Please subscribe, leave us a rating, leave us a review. We'd very much appreciate that. Yeah, but we got a lot of Roost related news to get to first, I think.
We got a lot of roost related. That's tricky. I'm going to try and use words here. Yeah, we got a lot of exciting stuff. So I guess I'll jump right into it. So this is going into year three of the Roost. Gone through two football seasons so far, and it's been a lot of fun. But the plan behind this was always to make this a sustainable working business, if we're going to be honest. And so this coming week, or I guess by the time you're listening to it today, we are launching a Patreon page for all our fans. And so that's going to work out. You can go to patreon.com/@theroost. And that's where we're going to be posting all of our exclusive content for people that want to follow and support us. So that's going to be practice notes. That's going to be recruiting breakdowns, things like that. We'll have special analysis pieces on there from time to time. And that's going to enable us to monetize this and start making this a productive business and hopefully grow it into bigger and better things and allow us to do some more exciting things. So we're excited to launch that. And as a bonus for all of you who might be on the fence, if you subscribe this coming, I guess, week and a half, you are going to get the Roost preview for the 2020 football season for free. So that launch date, more news, is coming up on July 8th. So today, that's going to be June 23rd. You can go out and you can support us on Patreon. Join that starting lineup tier, and you are going to get a copy of the Roost preview for free as a part of joining, and we'll give it to you early. So that's right. If you go and subscribe on Patreon right now, before July 1st, we will give you a copy of the preview July 1st, and everybody else has to wait till July 7th. So that'll be the launch date for the preview. So I know that's a lot of dates and numbers and things, but the important thing right now is patreon.com/@theroost. Go subscribe. You can find some more information about that on the site. Got an FAQ up there, a couple other things. You have any questions, you know where to find us. You can reach me on Twitter or on the website, on the forum, any of that. But this is going to enable us to get some new and exciting exclusive content for you guys and keep things trucking along on the podcast. So we're going to get into some more football things, but we also wanted to mention for anybody who is joining us that is not a strictly Rice fan, maybe you're coming here to check out some UTEP stuff, that date, July the 7th, that's also when we are going to be releasing our Conference USA preview. So we'll have more information of that coming up, but you can go find that on the site. We'll have information going there at theroost.com. And we got a lot of exciting things in the works. And I guess that means we're getting close to football season. And that is probably the biggest relief in itself. So we're glad to have some sort of normalcy back in our lives, maybe.
Yeah. And the maybe is a nice segue, because the other bit of news we have to discuss before we get into the bulk of the podcast is that, so we talked about last week how, you know, you've been seeing it programs across the country as teams are coming back and athletes are getting on campus and starting voluntary workouts. Naturally, as one would have expected, a fair number of athletes are testing positive for COVID-19. The vast majority of those have been reported as specifically asymptomatic cases and have resulted in generally it being reported that the players that tested positive are being quarantined, and then those that they've had contact with are self-isolating. But then shortly after we recorded last week's episode, it was announced that several University of Houston players had tested positive and had symptoms. So U of H went ahead and shut down its voluntary workout programs for the summer. So
credit to Joseph Duarte, he broke the news. And actually, the first part that came out was that Houston was shutting down their voluntary workouts. That was what he reported. And then he followed up with saying 6 athletes have tested positive, which we got into a little bit, Carter, last week about some schools were testing players when they were coming back. Some people were not. Houston, their plan initially was only to test people that were showing symptoms. And what do you know? People showed symptoms. They tested positive. And then the next logical solution was to shut it down. I'm not going to broach all the medical concerns, but I feel like you could have seen that coming if you were going to test people.
Yeah. Well, and it just sort of shows the wisdom in all of these teams that have had programs where you're testing everybody. Cause I mean, really that's what you have to do. Like the entire generally an understood feature of this disease and why it is part of why it's been such a huge issue is that you can have it and not know it, and you can spread it without knowing it. Cause you know, there's even, you know, there's a distinction between like asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic. And a lot of times there are people that get very mild cases and don't realize they have it even when they're showing very mild symptoms. So like, I guess there's your lesson is test everybody and keep testing, because you're not going to be able to get a handle on this when you have people in contact, even as much as you're trying to, you know, have social distancing rules. Like there's only, if you're going to try to initiate these practices and workouts and stuff, like you're just going to have people in contact with each other. And at some point transmission's going to happen. And if you're not keeping track of where it's happening, you know, things can get rough in a hurry.
Yeah. And I think everyone in credit Rice with it, at least being, I feel like on the more cautious side of things, but it's pretty naive if you are a decision maker in any, college athletics body, and you're declaring that, you know, we are going to be the group of people that no one gets sick. Like you're not, nobody's special. Like the odds are that everyone who is coming back to any campus, I mean, I saw Denton Ryan High School had somebody test positive and they shut down their voluntary workouts. Like the odds of you having nobody in a group of 100 people or however many you're bringing back to campus that has not been exposed to somebody that has this, just going from the data from schools that are reporting. I mean, Houston had a case. Let's see, Alabama's had some. I know Iowa had some. Conference USA, Marshall had a couple. I mean, Texas had like, what did they have? They were
like 13, that. I think.
Yeah, like 13. And they're quarantining another 10 players, like Ole Miss, UCF, Auburn, Boise State, Oklahoma State. Like if you're catching a trend, like people are going to come back. And if you test them, like you're going to find this. And I don't understand on the Houston side of things. I don't understand why you open up voluntary workouts if your plan is to shut them down as soon as somebody tests positive, because somebody is going to test positive. Like just by the numbers.
And I guess the thinking behind it is like, you know, if you've got 6 symptomatic cases or you've got 6 cases and some of those are symptomatic, then how many more people have they spread that to that you now have not kept track of because you weren't testing them unless they had symptoms to begin with. So,
And I think the other part that kind of makes this almost even more cringeworthy is, you know, Houston released a statement that said, you know, out of an abundance of caution, we're shutting down workouts, which is great. But where was that abundance of cautions when you told people they could come back and not test? You know, that doesn't really make sense. And then the university or the athletic department, technically there's a distinction, but neither of them has responded to any request so far, as far beyond the initial statement. They've been completely silent, which, I mean, that's not really a good look either. You got to either own it and say, hey, you know, this wasn't the best case, where here's our new plan for going forward, or you got to say something. You can't just, I mean, endanger potentially these student athletes' lives and then just go radio silent. Like, it's just, it's really a bad look. And I mean, I guess the one other component to keep in mind with this is it's mid June right now. And technically, if we're playing the football season as scheduled, then Houston doesn't have football for another 2 months and nobody else has football for 2 months. So it's one thing to see, and I'm not going to trivialize any positive tests of COVID-19, because obviously this is a very severe thing that's a pandemic literally affecting the globe right now. But if you're going to be tracking and being cautious with these numbers, you would sure rather see a smattering of positive COVID-19 tests in your organization in June than August. Like, if you have 10 players test positive August, 20th instead of June 20th, like, that puts into whole sorts of different alarm bells.
I mean, I guess if you didn't have the good protocols to begin with, I guess as long as everybody involved is okay, which, at least now you have those protocols in place, even if you should have had that from the beginning, but
we'll get there. And that's not even us, like the Rice podcast, dogging on Houston. Like, everybody that I've seen, like, that covers Houston from sports to otherwise is kind of like, guys, like, what were you thinking? So, but hopefully we've had our scare and that we can get back to testing everybody and being cautious and being as smart about this as possible. And everyone wear your dang mask so we can have football.
The rallying cry. Listen to Nick Saban, folks.
Oh, is this a Sabanism? Did I miss this?
Oh yeah, he's been doing PSAs. And basically with that exact messaging, like wear your dang masks so we can have football.
I'm going to get those bumper stickers printed. There you go. We'll tack that onto the Patreon. Go subscribe to the Patreon and we'll get you a wear your dang mask sticker. Oh man. So we'll see. Yeah, and we're going to be giving you these Rice updates as we go through this series, and hopefully each episode doesn't start with our COVID-19 update. But if we're being honest, we're probably going to have a good amount of COVID-19 updates over the next couple of weeks or so. But that's going to be a part of the business as we all just kind of run forward and hopefully see a light at the end of the tunnel. That's the goal in all of this.
All right, we are now here with our guest for the week, who is Adrian Broaddus of ESPN 600 in El Paso, covering UTEP. How are you doing, Adrian?
I'm doing great. Carter, Matthew, you guys do such a great job. I really appreciate you guys having me on the program, and I'm excited to talk some UTEP football today.
And you said that without a stutter. Tell me, how excited are you to talk UTEP football?
I was going to say, that was impressive enthusiasm.
Well, I'll tell you guys, we just came off a 3-hour radio show here in El Paso, just talking some UTEP football in the mix among our interviews. And, it's funny because the state of the program right now is so weird. It's at a point right now where everybody is kind of questioning different things. How many wins is this team going to win? Is going to win this year? Can this team actually improve? Can they find a quarterback who stays the whole season without being benched at any point? Can the defense improve? There's so many questions on this UTEP football team. And I guess if you're looking at it at a glass half full, you could look at the younger development. You could look at the younger talent that this team has on its roster. But on the flip side, if you're a pessimist, you're looking at this UTEP football team thinking, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? I mean, Dana Dimel right now is at the midway point of his 5-year guaranteed contract, and a lot of fans are scratching their heads, wondering whether or not to buy season tickets, wondering how this program can salvage itself, and wondering if this program can ever, get off the right foot.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned it. It's interesting because, just juxtaposing this from the Rice perspective, this is Rice and UTEP, when they brought in Mike Bloomgren and they brought in Dana Dimel, were kind of at a similar-ish state, and it was, okay, we're declaring a rebuild and we're starting over. And so far, I think you'll hear different perspective from Rice fans. There's a good amount of frustration because everyone wants it right now. But there's some measured, I don't know, realism, optimism, whatever you want to call it, that there's at least signs that you can point to where you kind of say, all right, it might not be going as fast as we want, but I feel like they're putting steps and this could be the year kind of they go. So where was the disconnect between, you know, Dana Dimmel comes in and the hire was at the time, I feel like it was, you know, kind of like, okay, this is not like, you know, woohoo, we're so excited, but it wasn't like, oh man, this is terrible. Like, Dimmel was at least a proven commodity who'd been decent at stops before. You know, at what point did they take a left turn and say, like, you know, this is not working like we want it to?
Yeah, I think this is a great, I love the comparison, by the way, between Mike Bloomgren and Dana Dimmel, because when you look back to 2018 and how both coaches started, it was kind of like a year zero between both coaches. I mean, Rice didn't do that well in 2018. Dana Dimmel just won a game back that same year as well. Two wins in 2 years is where it kind of is the biggest difference. And last year in 2019, I kind of look at Dana Dimmel's campaign, especially how he closed out the year, and just feel like that was another year zero. We haven't seen a year one with this program. We haven't seen this program take the next step and show signs of development with their young players, you know, even unleash some of their young players and just get fans re-energized about the young talent that this team has and how they and how they preach, you know, constantly about all the things that they could do. And you know, with Rice, what they did last year, winning three straight at the end of the season, that's what you want out of a program that's trying to develop and take the right steps in the right direction. And UTEP just hasn't gotten to that point. So I think a lot of fans here in El Paso are really hoping that this season is the year where you'll start to see more wins for the Miners, and then you'll also just start to see some more development among its younger players.
And I mean, that is the goal, but you mentioned the youth piece. I know that, and I guess this is really part of the conversation during our extended offseason has kind of been around the transfer portal and that legislation and whether or not there's going to be a reality soon where players are allowed to transfer without sitting out a year. We haven't even broached that place yet, but I know UTEP in particular was hit pretty hard with outgoing transfers, which, you know, certainly if you're building a program, the goal is, you know, 3 years in that you have guys that understand the system, can execute at a high level and, you know, help lead people along. Where is UTEP on the spectrum? Are they kind of starting over almost again? Year zero times I guess if you keep adding year zeros, you'll always be year zeros because zero plus zero. This is a Rice podcast. We got to put the math in there somewhere.
Additive identity is the phrase you're looking for.
Ooh, this is good. This is good. Write that down.
I did minor in math, so like.
No, you're totally right. I mean, this year, exactly, to start off, it's another year zero. I mean, when you look at the transfer portal, the Miners were just hit so hard this offseason. It started off with Trayshawn Wolf, who was, if you were to look at this 2020 season, you would probably have thought if Trayshawn Wolf was still on this roster, he would have been their either number one or number two receiver. And he had a phenomenal year last year. And, you know, Devon Cooper's another wideout who came in as a graduate transfer from the University of Arizona. And he broke his arm, or his forearm, I should say, within the first four games of the season last year. So we didn't get to see a lot of him, but he decided that he wanted to transfer out too. But the bigger losses in my eyes were guys like Greg Long, an offensive lineman who could have been an all-conference potential guy this year for the Miners. And a guy like Mitchell Crawford, it sounds funny, but a punter who was phenomenal with the Miners and showed so much consistency. Well, he leaves as a graduate transfer to go to play for Michigan State. And, you know, you could clearly see that he has his eyes set on something greater than just, you know, graduating from a school. He wants to play on Sundays. And that's why he decided to transfer out and do something like that. And I look at the young talent on this roster. I look at who they have as far as their personnel. And, you know, you go back to what Dana Dimmel has been preaching this offseason. He's constantly said that he likes the personnel that he has. He's excited about growing some of the younger talent and mixing in some of the older junior college guys that they've brought in as well.
If you had where's you can catch everybody up? How much of spring practice, because everybody was kind of staggered, was UTEP able to get in? And did they get a couple practices in? Did you get to see any of those guys that might be up and coming pieces?
Well, let me tell you this. They had six spring practices this past spring. But the biggest thing for them was the defensive side of things for the spring, because they were switching over from a 3-4 to now a 4-3. And let me be the first to say, if you're ever going to be coaching at UTEP, you cannot have a 3-4. You just won't pressure the quarterback. And that it was reflective in the stats last year. I mean, UTEP was the worst team in the country when it came to sacking the quarterback and putting pressure on them. So they're hoping, or the hope was this offseason, was to implement that 4-3 defense and really kind of establish some of their players that they're bringing on as first-time starters. If you look at the projected starters this fall for the defensive side, they've got seven junior college guys who could be in starting roles on the defensive side. That's not a good sign when you're trying to go and switch over to a 4-3. I don't know how Mike Cox, the defensive coordinator, has I don't know what his philosophy is, but this is going to have to be a very quick turnaround for this defense if they're going to have to be, you know, trying to have some consistency this season. Knowing that they've got seven projected junior college starters.
There's a lot of teams in Conference USA. And I feel like Conference USA has plumbed the JUCO ranks, you know, more or less across the board. But there's a lot of teams in Conference USA that might not have seven JUCO players on their defense, let alone seven expected to start. That's going, you know, Bill Snyder, Kansas State, bring them in and plug them in.
Yeah. I don't think Rice has that many on the whole roster.
I'm trying to think. And they recruit them more seven. Than
yeah, they recruit them more than they used to. But yeah, I don't. And what Aldridge, Mike, Smith, Rosner? There might be seven of them, but that's about it.
Yeah, you got a couple guys on defense that have. Jaron Banks is coming in. You got a corner they brought in last year. I mean, you might get up to seven. But what's been, and you know, not to make this an entire compare Rice to UTEP, but what's been really interesting about Rice is they've hit at an unsustainable rate with their JUCO players.
Yeah.
Like they've brought in JUCO players and they've become stars. Mm. You know, like Blaze Aldridge is going to be a first team All-Conference USA player this year. Brad Rosner, I think he was second or third on some of the preseason list. He's another guy that's up there. Like, to get a player that good from the JUCO ranks is rare. To get two is fantastic. And to rebuild a defense like that, it's hard. And I guess that's part of what makes it so challenging to recruit and play at the group of five level right now, you know, is the ability for players, you know, Adrian, you mentioned the punter leaving to Michigan State and like losing a punter, you know, like, that doesn't always sound like, oh, that's a big deal. But like, usually you have one guy and that's his job. And then you go to no guys and UTEP still doesn't have a punter. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that you're totally right. Yeah, you're totally right on that. And when it comes to the punter position for the Miners, I mean, they have a good pool, and this might sound kind of funny, but they've got a great pool out of the Australian, out of an Australian camp. So I would hope that, you know, I guess Miner fans hope that they could continue that pipeline. That's how they initially got Mitchell Crawford, who's panned out real nicely for them. That's how a lot of other colleges across the country have really capitalized on some of their punters as well. And, you know, just going back to some of the JUCO guys that the Miners have, I mean, I'm not saying all of them are, you know, just guys that you can disregard. I think that the Miners are just trying to find the kind of guys from the JUCO ranks that they could really hit on, because the ones that they've had, I would say it's kind of a 50-50 split. Sometimes they'll be highly regarded in the recruiting class, but then you'll never hear from them again. And then on the other side, sometimes the JUCO guys come into UTEP and they play right away and they become, you know, 2-year starters for the Miners. So it's a hit or miss situation. I think the coaching staff is trying to get a good grasp on what area to recruit. They've been recruiting Texas, California, a little bit of Arizona, a little bit more in the past couple of years. So I think the area of junior college transfers is also real important for UTEP recruits.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, you know, that's one of those things that makes UTEP such a hard job to begin with, is that, you know, you're in Texas, okay, for whatever that counts for, but it's not like
air quotes around that.
Yeah, but Rice certainly has its own challenges in recruiting, but, you know, one of the things they can fall back on is that they're in Houston. Like, you know, there's a lot of talent nearby, even if you're, you know, between academics and the competition from bigger programs, you're not going to have access to the best of that talent, maybe. But, like, there are still plenty of guys that play good football, you know, either in town or within, like, a 3-4 hour drive. But UTEP, like, you know, you've got the vast expanse between of West Texas between you and the talent centers here. And then on the other side of you is New Mexico, which is not exactly a football hotbed. And then, you know, so you're kind of caught in terms of where's your recruiting base. And so it's just one of those, you know, one of those things that makes hard jobs hard.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to add and tee you up a little bit. I think this was interesting. So in the kind of pre-show stuff we were talking about, and I guess before we brought you on, we were talking about the Conference USA season preview that is coming out. And as part of putting that together and talking with you is really interesting, because you think of, and this, you know, coming from a Rice perspective as well, when people from the outside see a 1-win, a 2-win, a 3-win team, whatever, a non-bowl team, you just kind of assume that, you know, there must not be that much talent on the roster. And, you know, the totality of the UTEP roster might not be good, but there's some guys that, like, and so it's kind of like a bias of, if you ever look at an all-conference team, like, oh, what do you know? It's all the players from the best teams, which usually makes sense. But it's really hard to make a non-conference team, even if you're, or an all-conference team, if you're an all-conference caliber player and you play for a team that won one game or two games. And UTEP has a couple guys that have a lot of talent, but they're just kind of one guy here, one guy there. Is there a couple too? I'm not sure if anybody from the minors made it on the all-conference list, but do you have a name or two that folks could watch? I know my you know, UTEP football rising star crush, if you can call it that, would probably be Quadres Wadley at the running back position. Like, he's probably a top 5 or 6 back in Conference USA if he's healthy, which is crazy because you wouldn't expect that from UTEP.
Yeah, and I totally first I want to touch on the proximity thing, because I think that's really important to know. And I think I'll shift over to basketball really quick, because Rodney Terry, the head coach of UTEP basketball, I think he put it best when he was saying, you know, getting people here to El Paso, once you get them here, you can kind of sell them on the city. You look at the city, it's beautiful, the food is great, it's very safe in this town, and you know, there's a lot of pros to living here in El Paso. People, if you're an athlete, you can work on your craft, you can really hone in on your skills and have a good area to work on without a lot of distractions that maybe a big city would have. And I think that's one of the big things, is getting recruits here on campus, selling them on the city itself, and then having them in turn get excited about, you know, UTEP sports. You know, when you're talking about players, diamonds in the rough or whatever it may be, I look at guys on this roster. You could kind of go when you look at the offense, I definitely agree with you. Quadres Wadley is one of the more phenomenal and more consistent players that UTEP has had in the past couple of years. The durability factor with him is just the biggest question mark. I mean, last year he was out for the whole season before the season even started because of a non-contact injury. And, you know, a lot of minor fans were really sad that he couldn't step on the field last year with this team. And I'll go with a different name. I'll give you Bobby DeHaro, a guy who I've covered even back into his high school days at Montwood High School here in El Paso. He's a left guard for the minors. He was an all-conference honorable mention as well. And I think this guy kind of shows flashes of Will Hernandez, who, as most know, he was a second-round draft pick and is currently playing for the New York Giants. And Bobby DeHaro, a big guy, 6'4", 300 pounds, a junior this year. He could have a big season with the minors, especially paving the way for running backs like Quadres Wadley, like a young running back like Deion Hankins, and even Josh Fields, who's on their running back roster as well. And on the defensive side, my favorite player is definitely Praise Amahuli, a 6'3", sophomore out of Katy, Texas, 245 pounds, has speed, can really, really move off the snap. And, you know, last year he led the team in tackles for losses and a sacks as a freshman. So I'm excited for this young player for the minors. Last year, when you looked at him, you didn't think he was that big. But when he plays, he just plays all over the field, very quick. I'm excited for him, especially transitioning to this 4-3 defense.
And you kind of alluded to it earlier. Do you think that's just the position? Well, not really a position shift, but maybe, I guess, a shift with a different way of how things are going to be deployed. You really think that's going to open up some more opportunities?
I think so. Well, it kind
or
of goes
is it,
both
is
ways.
This it can't be worse?
Like, I think it kind of goes both ways, because last year you had two experienced guys on your on the defensive line, and Denzel Chukwukalu and Chris Richardson, which if you're a critic and you're watching some film on UTEP football, you might say that those guys up front were the reasons why Praise Amahuli kind of found some luck when he got into the backfield. But at the same time, now with four guys up front, bringing back Josh Ortega, who's also a senior on the minors, and Dedrick Simpson, who's been kind of in and out of the mix. He's been injured at times, but he's back on and he's healthy with the minors this year. When you have two guys like that up front, you still feel confident with Praise Amahuli. And just like you said, I mean, can't get any worse than, you know, being among the worst teams in the country when it comes to sacking the quarterback.
And in interest of full disclosure, I'm pulling up the numbers right now, but if UTEP was last in Conference USA and sacks, Rice was, oh no, no, I stand corrected. UTEP was 13th with 12. They had one more than Middle Tennessee, and Rice had 15 as opposed to 12. But again, it was one of those things that just, like, I don't know what it was, but you couldn't get to the quarterback, and it makes it a lot harder. And what I think was actually really interesting on the Rice front and the UTEP front, that neither of these teams were very good at sacks, but found enough pressure. The UTEP secondary, you know, for all the defensive woes, was pretty decent. They finished middle of the pack against the pass. I know, I kind of a sieve against the run, but seventh of the conference against the pass, were able to be, you know, pretty productive, all things considered.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this year you might see a little bit, you know, a little bit better production actually out of the secondary. I like guys like Justin Prince, who's coming back off an injury, even Josh Caldwell, a guy from California who's really panned out as a junior college transfer. And then you get younger guys like Devon Inyang, and you get a Duron Lowe. I'm excited for the secondary for the minors this year. I think they'll do a nice job. And if this year they can show that they've got at least a deeper secondary than we've seen in years past, and not having to kind of scrap with whoever they have on their roster, I think that will be a real sign of improvement when you're talking about the defensive backs for UTEP.
So I guess I'm curious, like, there's plenty of pessimism around the UTEP program right now, but if things break right and you sort of get the best version of this UTEP team that there can be in 2020, what does that look like? Like, who are the guys that are stepping up? What are the areas that sort of improve the most, and kind of the places where things need to break well for the season to go as well as possible?
Yeah, it's a great question, because right now there is a lot of pessimism across the city. We get calls on the show all the time about, you know, season tickets and why they're not purchasing them anymore. And, you know, I reference my dad all the time, who's you know, in his mid-50s, and he still hasn't seen a UTEP bowl win in his entire life. You date back to 1967 for the last UTEP bowl win, when they won it, coincidentally enough, here in the Sun Bowl. But you know, when you look at this team, I guess in a glass half full way, I guess the best case scenario in my eyes is that the quarterback position pans out, because the quarterback position is one of those with the minors that just has not been consistent all pretty much, you know, in the past 5 years. I think I've
Matt, this done... sounds familiar.
I was saying, I've heard this music before.
Well, I'll throw this at you guys. How about this? Since 2015, the minors have started they've started 8 different quarterbacks, and just 2 of those guys have passed for over 1,000 yards in a single season, none of them lasted an entire season at the position. So it's just a quarterback carousel here in El Paso. And if you can find continuity at the quarterback position, if you could harbor a good running back, a young running back like Deion Hankins, who is El Paso's all-time leading high school rusher in history, I think that's where you get it. I mean, Deion Hankins was a guy I watched in high school at Parkland High rush for over 7,000 yards over his three-year career. I mean, he was a phenomenal running back and had SEC offers coming out of high school, decided to go with the minors. And last year on the first play he ever ran with the minors, he suffered a concussion, never played on the field again last year. So I heard a lot of great things coming out of him over the offseason. I think if you're talking about a recipe for success, you have to have some continuity at the quarterback position, and you have to have young talent like Deion Hankins really step up.
Okay, so two things off of that. First, I remember talking and watching some stuff on Hankins last year at this point in the summer, and I was really excited to see it. I thought he could be a breakout star for UTEP, and I was really bummed when he got hurt. And so that was just really, you know, talk about sometimes there's just bad luck, and that was a bad luck situation. But on the quarterback piece, so Rice over the past two seasons, so we're not even going back to 2015, but just the past two seasons, five different quarterbacks have started a game. Oof. At Rice. If we're taking out Wildcat snaps and we're just talking actual quarterbacks, seven different quarterbacks have taken a snap for Rice in the past two seasons.
Wow. All right. That takes the winner right there.
Wow. And I'm trying to think out, like, so we had Stankavage injury. We had Tom Stewart injury. We had Wiley Green injury. We had Evan Marshman injury. So four of those have at least had their starting run stabbed by an injury, so it wasn't just bad play. Yeah. We had some bad play issues that led to that. Actually, Giovanni Johnson, he got hurt as well.
Injury. So
actually,
yep. Same. So they had to put back in the already injured Tom Stewart in that Marshall game.
So actually, I think is that every quarterback who started for Rice in the past 2 years has been injured. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man.
And hey, what do you know? When they won those three games at the end of the season, they were able to keep the same. I mean, they brought in Giovanni for, like, you know, option packages, but, like, it was the same quarterback the whole time. It turns out that, like, that makes a difference.
And it's funny, you can't boil it all down to the quarterback position, but sure, that sure does seem to matter a lot in this game.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I continue to preach this is UTEP just needs to find a quarterback. I mean, you could go back to the Jameel Shower days back in 2014, and that's probably the last time.
Oh man, I have not heard that name in a long time.
and
that's the last time you had a quarterback play a whole season for the minors. And I think a lot of fans, you know, back in 2016, they were hoping that Ryan Metz would be that guy, the next guy to step up for the minors at that position and be the true gunslinger, especially because they had so much optimism after he won in a real historic fashion, comeback fashion, I should say, against New Mexico State over there on the road in Las Cruces. And that was a big game for the minors to win that one. But yeah, it's just some continuity at the quarterback position. I know that Dana Dimmel is you know, speaks real highly of Gavin Hardison, the sophomore out of Hobbs, New Mexico, who threw for over 5,000 passing yards when he was at the high school level. And he's got a cannon. I mean, I've watched him before too. And the one thing he needs to really clean up is his accuracy at times. But if he's able to develop some mobility over the offseason, I think he's somebody that Dimmel would really look to as far as the projected starting quarterback for this year. TJ Goodwin kind of breathing down his neck, a freshman out of Houston. Didn't see the field last year, which I really, you know, last year you get guys like Kyle Oxley and Brandon Jones, and you're just trying to kind of salvage a season at the end and really win something. But I would have liked to see some of the younger guys play last year, like TJ Goodwin. Didn't get a snap last year, so we really don't know what to expect. But I've been told that he's a pocket passer. He has some mobility behind him, and that he has a lot of talent as an athlete that the Miners want to maybe have him as that backup position at quarterback. And so maybe after those first three games, the Miners play Texas Tech, Nevada, and Texas. after those three games, the Miners then host New Mexico State, and you think that could be the make it or break it game for Gavin Hardison. If he doesn't win that game, you could see a TJ Goodwin maybe step in or breathe down his neck and maybe play in some conference games. Or on the flip side, if he does win that game against New Mexico State, maybe we see a quarterback for a whole season in Gavin Hardison.
And I was actually in looking it up right now, because from memory, so he came in, you know, kind of a break the glass. Kyle Loxley gets hurt against Rice last year, and he just, I mean, to be fair, this is a young guy who's being thrown in against at that point that is a defense that's playing a really high level, and he just kind of looked lost. Is it kind of a situation of just like you're just throwing out a young guy into a really, you know, a lose-lose environment where you got to go put the team on your back in a tough situation? Or did you get to see anything in spring that, you know, makes you think that he could take those next kind of steps, just with, you know, if nothing else alone, he's had some more continuity in the system?
I see that totally. And in that Rice game, I think he was just thrown in a bad position, because all that week we were hearing from the coaching staff that, you know, it was Kyle Loxley's last game. He was going to play the whole game. Dimmel wanted to honor all the seniors, despite a lot of fan responses who really just wanted to see a new quarterback in the mix. I'll give you another example. Against UAB, the Miners just did not play well at all. And Gavin Hardison was thrown in that game, and he actually showed flashes of being a really, really good quarterback. He threw for over 200 yards, had a passing touchdown, and, you know, it made fans a little bit more excited. And they were really let down when Gavin Hardison wasn't even, you know, playing in the New Mexico State game the following week. So when they saw him thrown back into the Rice game, I think everybody kind of gave him they understood. They said, they kind of thought, yeah, he probably wasn't prepared for this game. He probably wasn't ready to be thrown in the Rice game after Kyle Loxley broke his thumb. And I think over the offseason, the biggest thing for Gavin Hardison is building the chemistry among his receivers, especially since you're starting to, you saw two receivers leave in the transfer portal this offseason, and establish some more continuity at the position. If he's going to be the true starter, he's got to be the one to step up and take it.
Which, you know, easier said than done sometimes.
Yeah, that's totally right.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It just keeps striking me how much this really just parallels Rice's situation with quarterbacks. And it's like, even going back to, like you mentioned, Jameel Showers, like, it's really that exact same time frame since Rice has had any consistency at quarterback. I mean, they had, you know, it's funny to look back. The 2015 season was a bit of a disappointment at the time, coming off of three straight bowls. And they ended up going 5-7 that year, which, you know, we would have very gladly taken a 5-7 season at any point in the last couple of years. But Dreyfus Jackson, who was a quarterback that year, was the last time Rice has had, you know, a guy kind of seize the job and be the unquestioned starter, really. And then the same thing going into this season, like, there are some options now. There are some guys with potential. You know, you have Mike Collins, the grad transfer, who I think is Rice's third straight season bringing in a grad transfer quarterback. But it's pretty unquestionable, I think, that Collins has the most talent of any of them. And then they've got, you know, Javonte Johnson, who was a freshman last year and is really athletic, has a lot of potential. And so you feel good about what the options are now, but the one, you know, the number one thing on my wish list for Rice this year is that the same quarterback starts all 12 regular season games.
I hear you.
It's funny because on the Rice perspective, I mean, it's hard to quantify how many wins a quarterback is worth, but I mean, you got to talk about it, like at least a couple probably. And it's funny because our you know, we like to, when we process sports, you know, this, a lot of coaches will look at the full body work and see the full game and say, you know, we might not have won this game, but I can take this and take this. And, you know, you can kind of use those soft measures. But when a fan is evaluating a season, it's just like, you won one game. Like, it doesn't matter how close you were to the other losses. Like, you won one. And a quarterback can be enough of that difference in a couple games. And it's funny because if UTEP, you know, take just like a conference average quarterback last year and put him on UTEP. Like, you're not talking about a one win team. You're probably talking about like two, three. Like, mm-hmm. And then the perception of the program, like, it starts to shift a lot quicker. And all of a sudden, a coach is a really good coach when he has a good quarterback. That's how it works, right?
Oh, yeah. I completely agree with you. And you know, another thing with the quarterback position with the minors is, you know, you got to look at the receiving core. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Jacob Cowing, who comes out of Arizona, a very small town. I believe it was Maricopa that he comes out of. And he comes into this program last year with three different quarterbacks, Kyle Oxley, Brandon Jones, Gavin Hardison, and still leads the team as a true freshman in receiving yards. 550 last year, three touchdowns, and he stormed through as a true freshman, just played in 11 games too. But I'm with you. I think that if you look at some quarterbacks like a Gavin Hardison, you want to really project, you want to look at how many wins that they will actually get. And I just still go back to that NMSU game. I think that's the make it or break it game for the Miners. If they're not too down on themselves after the brutal three-game start, and they can somehow beat the Aggies, which they haven't done in the past 4 years, I think that's where he'll start building that confidence. And I think confidence has been probably the biggest issue out of the last 3 years when the Miners have just won two games, you know, dating back to when Aaron Jones wore a uniform for the Miners. They have not had the confidence at the quarterback position, and the confidence starts when you win games, frankly enough.
All right, so I have the solution. I can fix everything right now.
All right, I'm ready.
So last year, when y'all are laughing already, you got to at least hear me out. So last year, Rice falls to 0-9, and it's rough. And that's, so last year was the double bye week year, right? Which,
oh yeah.
Completely aside, I love that. That was fantastic. Space it out. Give everybody else a week, another week rest. But so during that second bye week, Rex Ryan comes in and he speaks to the team and he says a lot of things, but he's essentially like, look, you think you're better than your record, you're going to go win the next three games. And I was like, all right, Rex Ryan said we're going to win the next three games. And what did Rice do? They won the next three games. So if you know anyone affiliated to Rex Ryan, have him speak to the team. It'll be a Zoom call. It'll be really easy nowadays. And boom, that's your fix.
I love it. I think that's perfect because I think the Miners need as many Rex Ryan motivational speeches as they can get, especially after that three-game stretch and then starting off Conference USA with La Tech, Southern Miss, Charlotte, and North Texas. Yikes.
That's rough.
That's not good.
Oh, yeah.
So hypothetical world, walk with me here. Gavin Hardison is good. Like not all conference, you know, he's not Chris Robinson. Like he's good. Y'all beat the Aggies, New Mexico State goes down. You win a game at home. You've gotten into conference play and these pieces click. You talk about, you know, Cowing, a wide receiver, you know, praise. I'm going to mess that name up.
Amahuli.
There you go. Praise Amahuli is wrecking on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I'm not going to say best case scenario, but you know, everyone especially has the fans tend to be pessimistic. Let's just be honest. Everyone has the worst case scenario where nobody wins any games. And that, you know, people say that have complaints on Rice that too. You know, what's the best case scenario where, you know, some of these pieces really do take the next step? Because you mentioned Dana Dimmel has more than 1 year left on his contract. You know, what happens in 2020 that makes people feel like, you know, regardless of the win-loss record, you know, this was a successful year 0.12.
Yeah, great. This is a great question. This is a question that gets tossed around all the time here on Sports Talk with us in El Paso. What constitutes as, you know, a successful season with the minors. And you can't, unfortunately, just where the state of the program is, you just can't base it off wins and losses. Because if you're going to do that, you're not going to get the improvements, or you're not going to get excited about this team after this season moving forward. I'm looking at competitiveness. I mean, last year, you know, getting blown out in games like at North Texas 52-26, or losing to UAB on the road 37-10, or not even being in the game at the end against Florida International, losing 32-17. Those are games that the minors should definitely be more competitive in. And I think that's the biggest thing. Be competitive in these closer games in Conference USA. Unleash your younger talent instead of trying to just hold on to their red shirts, and really try to get the fans re-energized, because right now the fans don't know the face of the program. They want to cling on to somebody. They like the hometown kids and they like to cheer for them. But if the fans don't get excited by development by the younger players, then frankly, the excitement will just continue to dwindle here at UTEP. But stay competitive in games that you should be competitive in, and just, you know, unleash the younger talent. I think that's the biggest thing in my eyes for this season to be a success, no matter the wins and loss.
I mean, every game of the year but one, we'll be rooting for you guys. I would be remiss if I saw right before we started recording, you put up a tweet that did mention that UTEP's one FBS win over the last three seasons was against Rice. And we kind of talked about that game offline, but that was, oh, so brutal. I think I'm still scarred.
Well, think about this. I mean, the Miners go into that game, I believe, on a 22-game losing streak. And I was like, you know, I was still kind of at this point, I was like partially in college, but partially working here for ESPN Radio in El Paso. And I would post these like ridiculous tweets. Looking back on it, I shouldn't have done it. I felt bad. I feel bad now. I would say something like, you know, it's been 600 days since the Miners last won a game. Or like, you know, I'd say like it's been, you know, the last time UTEP's won a game, Aaron Jones was wearing a uniform. And I felt bad, you know, at the end, continuously tweeting this stuff. And especially because I knew how tough that 2017 season was. You know, I knew a lot of those players on that team, with Sean Kugler and how he resigned midseason, how they brought back Mike Price, which was one of the craziest college football storylines maybe in history. Bringing back a coach like Mike Price from the 2010s to come back to your program when he hasn't coached. He was at his lake house in Idaho. He wasn't ready to coach football, but they bring him back midseason, and you try to get a whole locker room to rally behind him, but you go winless that year and you start off the season. You lose to Northern Arizona to start off the season, but you don't just lose to them. You get blown out 30-10. And there's just, you know, that's when you started to feel like, wow, this is maybe rock bottom. I mean, and every week it would just be like, how could UTEP get a win? How could UTEP get a win? And, you know, people say what they want about Kyle Loxley. And, you know, I think that he's got some pros and cons, but I really do think, and if you look at that Rice game, he was the one who kind of mustered up that win for the Miners. And, you know, they got off to an early lead. The Owls come back in the end, make it a really close game. And the rest was in the books. The Miners finally snapped that 20-plus game losing streak,
which made it all the more important last year for Rice to come back, right? And that two-game winning streak had to go on the road.
Each of these teams has had a season in the last 3 years where they had one win on the season, and that one win was against the other. So misery loves company, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. It's funny.
Hopefully we're not back here having the same conversation next year.
Well, you guys might not be having the same conversation, but I'm not too sure about the Miners. I think that, but again, I mean, you know, The Owls closed out the season so in such a great way last year. You know, the three-game win streak, all the hype around the recruiting, everybody kind of rallying behind Mike Bloomgren. I liked how they closed out the season, and I think that's just what the Miners need this year. They don't need to win six games in order to have a massive comeback. They just need to win maybe it's just one. Maybe UTEP just needs to win one game but be competitive in the rest. and you know, show off the younger talent, make fans excited to go back to the Sun Bowl in 2021, and you know, get them re-energized about this program, because Dana Dimmel's not leaving after this year. And you know, you look at next year, that's the year that he's been really targeting, year four as a breakthrough year for the Miners, and we'll just have to see if that could actually come to fruition or not.
Now, was targeting year four, was that the marching orders coming in, and what was that, 2017, 2018, or was that?
I don't think it was the marching orders. I think it was, it kind of came, it became clear last year that year four was going to be the year. I don't think really anybody knows what they're getting into until they step foot in El Paso as a head coach and they really understand what they have. I mean, credit to Dana Dimmel for, you know, trying to overhaul the roster into what he wants it to be. I mean, credit to him for doing that. And, you know, also credit to him to just being a good players coach. I mean, you never hear anything bad about him. I can never say anything bad about him as a person because he's such a nice guy and always receptive to the media and, you know, is always, always trying to, you know, be as positive as possible for this team. But at the same point, he took a program that was really at rock bottom and is trying to get it to a point where, you know, it starts to win some games.
Yeah. And I will say this on the Dana Dimmel front, like I've had the talk to him in person a handful of times, but he's a fantastic like individual. And, you know, there's some coaches that give you a lot of coach speak and you'll never get a good quote from him. He's so honest and upfront and like calls it, you know, a spade a spade. Like, I really enjoy talking with him.
I agree. I'm with you on that. You can ask him anything. He's an open book and he's very honest. He'll tell it like it is and he won't shy away from the tough questions, which, you know, at times some coaches will really get frustrated when you ask him the tough questions. And I think Dana Dimmel has done a great job of maintaining composure and, you know, being the spokesperson that he needs to be for this program.
Well, it's a tough gig, like we've talked about it, but we, you know, fingers crossed for you guys. And then of Carter, do we have any more last minute things that we want to ask before we jump into our final segment?
Nope, I think we're ready for the lightning round.
Got a couple of questions. We're not going to turn an hourglass over and wait for you, but as quick as you can on the top of your think, on the top of your head. Man, words are hard, but we'll get there. On the top of your head, just kind of give us an answer, and then if it's a short explanation, go for it. But otherwise, we will, like I said at the beginning, hold you to this forever, and we'll see
awesome.
How it goes.
I'm ready.
All right. Lightning noise. All right. Question one. Will the 2020 football season start on time?
Oh, this is a great question. I'm going to go with yes.
All right. So follow up for that. Are there going to be fans in the stands at the Sun Bowl this year?
Allowed to, or just because they're getting tickets? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Totally kidding.
You know, UAB, Evan Dudley was on here last week, and we didn't have to specify that part.
Oh, man. I'm going to go with no. To start, no.
Okay. And then on the actual football front, who's going to lead UTEP in touchdowns this year?
I'm going to say Quadres Wadley. I'm going to be positive toward him. He's gone through so many injuries. This is his time. I feel so, you know, bad for such a hardworking guy. I'm going to say Quadres Wadley leads the team in touchdowns.
All right. And then on the other side of the ball, who's going to lead the team in sacks?
Oh, I'm going with my guy, Praise Amahuli. Love to say his name.
All right. And then just for the sake of not being biased, taking UTEP out of it, if UTEP doesn't win Conference USA West this year, who does?
Oof, man. This is a great one. You got me on this one.
If you want to default to Rice, we'll accept that.
You are allowed to butter us up.
I'm going to go with UAB. I love their program. I'm just torn between UAB and La Tech, because La Tech always gives me the consistency that you want in a program.
They're always good enough to win. They just don't.
That's right.
Like, honestly.
No, you're completely right.
So we'll let you split. So if If it's not UTEP, it's UAB or La Tech. So we've knocked out half the teams in the West. And then and then going bigger picture, if UTEP doesn't win Conference USA, which I did see they were 500-1 odds, so there's a chance. If UTEP doesn't win Conference USA, who does?
I'm gonna stick with La Tech or UAB. I think the West is gonna win it out of this year. Although I love what Charlotte has done, especially kind of turning their program around, and you know that they've been a fun team to watch too.
Hey, shirtless Will Healy on the beach, like that's what we have waiting for us. Charlotte takes this one. All right, round it out. So, are Rice and UTEP in the same conference in 2025? That's 5 years.
Oh, I love this question. I love this question. You know, the number one sports talk question to get, or the number one sports talk topic that gets thrown around is, why is UTEP in Conference USA? I don't know if you guys get that a lot with Rice.
I don't think that's just a UTEP question. I think every Conference USA school wants to know why they're in Conference USA.
Oh, man. No, I mean, I'm going to go with yes, because they haven't given any reason why they should be in any other conference, unless it's a merger of some sort where, you know, we're talking about the Sun Belt, or maybe we're talking about the Mountain West or something like that. But I'm going to go with UTEP, and UTEP is definitely going to be in Conference USA in 2025, because they don't have the resume to go to a different conference right now.
Okay. So following up on that, this is pre-pandemic. Like realignment, unless you're in one of the big Power Five leagues, realignment is what you talk about every June, and it's June, and we've had a much longer off season. So if you could, I mean, obviously we're throwing out you. I'm sure UTEP would love to go get into the SEC or the Big 12 or something like that. But assuming that doesn't happen, is there an ideal conference fit or schedule fit? Like if you could set the UTEP schedule, like what does it look like?
Oh, that's a great question. What I really, before I answer, I want to know, what is your answer for Rice?
If I could pick anything?
Yeah.
Oh, I would put Rice in the American.
Okay. I was really interested in that. I would put UTEP in Mountain West, just because of the rivalries that have been established in the Mountain West with the Miners over the past, over UTEP's history. You look at rivalries against teams like Wyoming, BYU. Those were so big to this community. I would love to see UTEP go to the Mountain West. Everybody in this town wants to see UTEP go to the Mountain West. And of course, the AAC is incredible, but I think that the Mountain West is just so special to a lot of Miner fans, just because of all the rivalries. Of course, New Mexico, and yeah, I left them out, but that's a huge rivalry as well for the Miners.
All right, brief pause. Carter, do you have an answer?
Yeah, I mean, it's the AAC, because there's no, like as a Rice grad from, like, and I graduated in 2013, all of the rivalries that I cared about for Rice are schools that are now in the AAC. Like it's SMU,
Conference USA,
it's Houston, it's yeah. Tulsa, it's Tulane, which is the closest thing to an academic peer Rice has in any of the similarly situated leagues. Like all of these schools, and close by ones too. These are the ones I think are like conference games that I would get excited to see Rice play. It's those schools that all went up to the AAC in that last huge round of realignment. And now Rice is just in, here we are sitting in CUSA with like UTSA in North Texas and UTEP. And it's like, hi guys.
It's like the family really reunion where everyone has to be civil, but nobody really wants to be hanging out together on Thanksgiving. Like that's conference.
Well, and that's the problem. Like, I mean, I don't know what you want in sports is where the conference is the family reunion where everyone hates each other's guts. Because that's where the drama comes from. But like, you know, you sit next to UTSA at the table, and it's like,
so the problem with Conference USA is people don't hate each other enough.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
No, that's right. That's totally right. I mean, you can't get fans here in El Paso who've been passionate about the rivalries for years and years, and you can't get them excited about watching a home game against UTSA. I'm sorry. I mean, I know that people want to really establish this rivalry between UTEP and UTSA or UTEP and Rutgers. Those aren't happening. That's not here in El Paso. And it's with opponents like New Mexico and Wyoming and BYU and Mountain West opponents like that, that everybody longs for here in El Paso. We get that question all the time. Why can't UTEP just go back into the Mountain West? And, you know, frankly, they can't warrant, they don't have the resume throughout athletics to go over to the Mountain West.
And you've just said that Rice and UTEP will be in the same conference in 2025, which curse you in your logic, but like, I mean, you very well could be right. All right, closing it in. We've taken a brief interruption, resuming the lightning round with the final question, which you've kind of already hinted at. Over under 1.5 more seasons with UTEP, or with UTEP, with Dana Dimel at UTEP.
Oh, I'll take the over. I think he completes the 5 years either way. And, if it's on the downhill part, it's going to be, a tougher rebuild after that. And if he continues after the 5 years, then that means that there's a winning season or there's light at the end of the tunnel. So, I think it's just right now, it's really tough for fans to be patient. It's really tough for fans to just hang in there with UTEP. And, it's just the excitement is at another low right now. Of course, with the pandemic going on, there's a lot of uncertainty, but, aside from that, it's just a lot of, not a lot of fan buzz from UTEP football.
All right. Well, you did a good job. You have completed the lightning round. You lose points for not saying that Rice was going to win Conference USA after being uncertain. And you do lose points for saying that we're still both going to be in Conference USA. But overall, we give you a passing grade, and you were more successful than UTEP football.
I appreciate that.
and thank you very much. This was a lot of fun. If you have anything to plug with us, where can we find you, listen to you, pay attention to what you're doing, and follow all the greatness that is UTEP football and what you guys got coming up for us this season?
Yeah, I appreciate that. You could follow me on Twitter at Adrian_Broaddus, and that's Broaddus. You could also check out all my work at KROD.com. You can either click KROD.com or go 600ESPNElPaso.com. And we do a bunch of podcasts. We have our daily show Sports Talk weekdays 4 to 7 here in El Paso. And we also do a ton on the website. So, yeah, I think that pretty much crosses everything right there.
And if we're angry about Conference USA, we just call you.
Yes, let's do that.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Adrian. This is a lot of fun. Thanks to those of you who stuck it out through the podcast and listened with us. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We'll see y'all again next week. And Rice fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.